This is Da Beat on KSPC Claremont. This one-hour program features interviews in studios and other performances by local artists in an effort to promote awareness and participation in the creative community that surrounds each of us. Da Beat is a collaboration between KSPC and the Da Center for the Arts, which is located in downtown Pomona. To find out more on their current exhibitions, upcoming concerts, and other programming, you can go to daartcenter.org. Previous episodes of this show can be found at interchange887.blogspot.com or on the iTunes store in the podcast section if you search The Interchange on KSPC. Finally, if you'd like to suggest content or get in touch with comments or questions, email me at jb022009@pomona.edu. Once again, that's jb022009@pomona.edu. You can also get in touch by calling 847-890-3900. On this week's show, I have a conversation on art and pedagogy and the way they intersect with Rebecca, Jay, and Matt, who have participated in the Teaching Artists Fellows program at the Armory Center for the Arts in Pasadena. Then I have a conversation with Pomona band Crater Creator. The in-studio tracks can be found at our blog, kspc.org/blog. But first, here are Jay, Matt, and Rebecca.
I'm Jay Lizo, and I'm a painter. I also animate and DJ.
I'm Matt Hillseth, and I'm a sculptor, and I use mostly industrial materials in my work.
I'm Rebecca Bennett Duke, and I'm also a sculptor.
Okay, cool. So could you guys, I guess, tell me a little bit about the show, just an overview of it?
It's a show of, basically it's kind of a takeoff of the Armory Fellowship in the show. And the Fellowship of the Armory is essentially a program for educated artists who usually have a master's degree or a master's of fine arts degree, mm-hmm. who get brought in by the Armory Center for the Arts, which is a great, basically it's like a school and a museum combined, where they do classes and they do shows, and they basically promote artwork throughout, mm-hmm. you know, Pasadena. They're located in Pasadena, but they bring in people from pretty much all over the country. I mean, it's a pretty impressive thing. And the fellowship program is, it brings in these artists, and they teach the artists to be teachers and how to effectively teach artwork to, well, mostly we deal with kids' grades, kindergarten through high school. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we get trained on teaching all the way through adulthood. And, I mean, they put us into school programs and things like that. And essentially, there usually was an annual show featuring all the fellows hosted at the Armory. And that's changed since the inception, so it's been hosted different places. And about the show, it's basically a show consisting of artworks that were inspired by our experiences. Because, I mean, mm-hmm. it was a very intense, rigorous teaching experience. So each of us kind of have a different thing we took away from it, or what we learned. Mm-hmm. Like, I know, just different projects inspired by, you know, things that really stuck out to us from the fellowship program. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the show was kind of like this reward for all the fellows that were involved in the program. And so, yeah, sure, the works in the show should be fairly, probably not typical of what we all do most of the time, but it'd be something like kind of somewhat resemblance of something that we do normally. But
I know when I met you guys, you were saying that the working title was like pedagogy. Is that still the title, or have you guys come up with a...
The title right now is Lesson Plan.
Lesson Plan. So, yeah, sticking with that idea. Mm-hmm. Cool. What do you think some of the differences between teaching other subjects and teaching art would be? Or what are the things that are especially challenging about teaching art, would you guys say?
They're all pointing at me.
You haven't spoken yet, so go for it.
Well, I mean, it's a good question.
And you've taught. I mean, you probably taught more than me and Jay, because you teach at a college level already. So
yeah,
already
I've been teaching college since 2001. I haven't taught other subjects, mm-hmm. But I think what's been challenging for many of us is trying to figure out ways of presenting contemporary art to children, because a lot of times the subject matter seems very, very adult. But what I think was most interesting to me about the program was, you know, if you just kind of push at it a little and think about it, there are ways of presenting the information that children can actually grasp without dumbing the information down, mm-hmm. without making it
just more one-sided, or you can keep the complexity.
Without speaking down to the children.
Yeah, without speaking down to them. You know, staying with some of the big topics. Like the first show that we toured with the children had to do somewhat with climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the work was kind of dark.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to figure out how to talk to them about, you know, the idea of the apocalypse in some cases a little bit tricky.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, maybe teaching other subjects, you don't necessarily have to come up against those kinds of tricky bits.
Yeah, they probably don't have that in, like, math.
I don't think they necessarily have that in math.
Well, one of the big difference that we were kind of taught there is, I guess, was the Socratic method, which I just learned about that, where I guess in most disciplines they tend to lecture, where we tend to ask more questions and kind of... I always thought it was, like, instead of Socratic, I thought it was, like, I just thought it was spelled secretive, like you secrete the answers.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought for a long time. Then I saw the name, I was like, oh, that guy.
Educated artists, secreting information. Fantastic.
So that's what I thought it was, but... I think
that is a big difference, because we weren't allowed to lecture, really. If we were lectured to the kids, we got yelled at, the challenge was really put on us not only to know the information, but to then kind of work backwards to say what questions will eventually lead a 5-year-old to this information.
Yeah.
And if you didn't hit it, you're a terrible teacher.
So it's like
and we would hear about it. We totally would.
Yeah, we were under close supervision there for a while.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed like it was part interview. Did it feel like that way to you? Like so students, what are you seeing here? And it wasn't like you had a list of answers you were trying to get them to hit.
Yeah.
You were trying to really find out what they saw and trying to get them to be able to talk about their gut reaction to the work they were looking at.
I guess that is the big difference teaching art than pretty much any other subject, is that it's because it's about self-expression, you have to find a way to get the kids to talk about themselves and to put themselves into their artwork.
Mm-hmm.
I think
to feel comfortable enough to do that.
Exactly. And I think that's the big difference.
And then also to be able to talk about it and to solicit some degree of community. I think that was a really big part. Because, you know, when I teach in college, you do critique, which is a pretty standard form of getting feedback from your peers. And at the end of every class, we would have the small children, a handful of them, would present their work to their classmates, and the classmates would then ask them questions about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why did you choose red or orange, or, you know, why so many spiders, or whatever the questions were, which was really quite fascinating to watch, because then they have to sort of articulate, and there actually is reasons behind why they made certain decisions, which are also fascinating.
Yeah.
I bet they're much more rational than you would think.
Well, it's getting them to be able to access that and be able to put it into words.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes people just let kids off. They let everybody off the hook just by saying, oh, I really like it. It's really beautiful. And those are some pretty colors. And that just doesn't take you anywhere.
Yeah, and we weren't allowed to say any of that either.
Yeah, there's a whole list of things we weren't allowed to do.
That's beautiful, that looks good. It has to be specific and it has to be a question.
I noticed you're using a texture over here.
I noticed you're using a pencil. Why did you choose that to draw?
But those are good questions.
Mm-hmm.
That's great, though, because I feel like just like throughout your education, usually you're kind of being taught that there are right answers and that there are wrong answers and that there's a specific way that you should think, or you're, I feel like, or at least in my experience, you know, going through the education system you're going through, and kind of, I think those kinds of questions kind of tend to die off, and so teaching them to young children is like a great it's just a great thing for them to start considering early on, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, teaching college, I've noticed that students want assignments where there's a correct outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And having an open-ended outcome is very upsetting for them.
Yeah, definitely. I think that I've encountered that with a lot of my professors, where they're just like, you guys are all just too perfect. Like, everything just needs to be, like, you know, really just, like, you do everything too. Like, you pay attention too much. You need to sometimes just, like, let go and release and do what you need to do and not just, like...
I should teach here.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like a bad problem to have.
That's what you got to do when you make all of those. You got to kind of paint outside the lines, because if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, eventually you get... It gets boring. I mean, there's no excitement.
A lot of mistakes.
I was always told that a good student in art made a bad artist out in the real world. So.
I'm doomed. I love being an art student.
No, a good art student.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was a bit of a troublemaker, but.
If you're just tuning in, this is Dabit on KSPC Claremont, a weekly public affairs show featuring interviews in studios and performances with local artists. I'm talking with Matt, Jay, and Rebecca, who participated in the Teaching Artist Fellows program at the Armory Center for the Arts in Pasadena, and who are currently organizing a show that will take place at the DAW in September.
Then I guess, could you guys talk a little bit about the works that you're going to be presenting in this show?
I
guess it's a little tricky because it's over, you know, you don't have a visual, but you can.
Yeah. I hope to present these paintings that are based on these dancers and protesters fused together.
Mm-hmm.
And coupled with the paintings would be a floral piece that has the markings of these dance steps, like with paint.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be on vinyl, like a black and white kind of tiled vinyl. And then a video piece that's projected onto the wall that kind of animates the context of these paintings. So that's the goal. Let's see if I get there. That's about it for me.
We got plenty of time. You'll get there. you have to get there at this point. We're doing the interview. Okay.
Yeah, you're committed. Now everyone knows what to look for.
Broadcasting, okay?
I know. I just kind of.
Just tone back all the artwork from this point forward. I'm doing a piece based off of the idea of kinetic learning, because it's very personal to me, because I am a kinetic learner. Like, I think if I went to school today, I'd probably be labeled ADD, and I feel ADD a lot when I have to talk to someone, or if I'm studying something, using my hands or doing something completely different. So I'm building a large-scale steel sculpture, and I am going to a performance piece, which is, like Jay was saying earlier, it's completely out of the box. I hate performance artwork. Throwing it out there. But I'm going to cover my hands and feet with paint and blindfold myself, and I'm going to climb on the work. So there's a remnant of me learning about the work in strictly a kinetic fashion with a record of it. And I'll have a video playing along with the piece itself, showing me just basically kind of using the work like a jungle gym and just exploring it in a simply tactile manner, not seeing with my eyes, just with my hands and feet. So that's what I'm planning on putting in.
And you're going to do that beforehand, right?
I can't do that at the opening. There's a really good chance I might hurt myself doing this, so I got to do that privately.
Let me know when you're going to do that.
I'm going to have crash pads. I'm doing it on concrete. This is going to be hardcore. No, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going to do it, but it should be fine. My sculptures are structurally sound, and I'll have enough stuff to grab onto.
Yeah. You've got paint on your hands and feet.
Yeah, but that's
steel. And you're blindfolded, Matt.
I'll be okay. I'll have a spotter. I'll have no sound. I'll just have someone scream out.
Thinking out the box.
I'm thinking out the box. This is dangerous stuff, though.
He's going stuntman.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't the piece become more valuable, though, if you do fall?
It depends if I die or not. If I die, it's
terrible. Well, one of the sort of go-to projects that I have with students with various materials is a fantasy landscape. So I'm going to make these boxes that have little fantasy landscapes in them. I think there's going to be an element of interaction where they light up, mm-hmm. or you look through a peephole to see it. I'm not sure exactly yet. Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
And there's going to be several more artists participating. How many people are participating in the show?
Four
more, maybe?
About four more. Four or five more, yeah. We're still getting confirmation. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing. Getting together working artists who are actually... who work as well is difficult mm-hmm. to coordinate. But it should be about four or five more.
Yeah. That's right.
I'm sorry, that working artists that work
that
or
actually
that
have
work together?
Jobs.
Oh,
yeah,
that,
and,
okay.
And, you know, we all... That is the thing, you know, when you get out of school, you're kind of starting to establish yourself and you do a lot of shows. You're kind of out there, but once you kind of get past that, you know, you got to deal with real life issues where everyone here has a life and it's just kind of like trying to organize around that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's going to be four or five more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
That would be great. And when's the opening?
September 14th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. What are some of the things that you guys learned from one another? I'm sure you learned a lot from the students as well, but I'm sure, like, working together and having the same struggles or being teachers for the first time also kind of brought you together in some ways or affected your artwork.
I learned to make lists on the wall when I give my studio projects, because I resisted that because it was a Not to Falls thing for a while, and I was like, Not to Fall would like write out the list and, you know, have his guidelines, and I was like, okay, I'm not gonna copy him.
He's the only one who can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like his
so,
original
like,
idea.
I was like, I'm not gonna copy him.
You've seen Not to Fall's workbook. He has like colors and pictures that
go along
with
it. I love that about
it.
Him.
I do too. I love that. So
he's
I was like,
15 different pens with him.
So yeah. I made it like I tried to make it so like okay, I'm just gonna do it all from the top of my head, you know, like freestyle. And had, you know, just kind of like mapped out in my head, but yeah, no, I had a copy and steal it. That's what I learned from is to make thorough lists and don't be afraid to show it on the wall.
Be organized.
Yeah.
Somewhat.
Yeah. I learned the same thing from Rebecca. She has a 40-pound notebook she always carried with her with all the instructions and like everything like
you
laid
weren't
out.
With me with the second show. I actually had another binder specifically for that show with facts about the Antarctic in it, and it just went on and on.
See,
and maps and
I would have lost it though. I'm very disorganized. I'm a very disorganized person.
So am I. That's why I have the binders.
Yeah, I don't have binders. See, I'm I always think I should get some, but I don't. Learn to be organized and just, I don't know. You know, learn to take your time. That's what it taught me a lot.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. when you work with kids and you're teaching anyone anything, there's a tendency to kind of speed up or not think that...
Yeah, there definitely is.
There's this idea that they know just as much as you do, where you
mm-hmm.
really have to stop and go, wait, they don't know anything. You need to take it from step one and just go slow. And that was one of the most important things. And, you know, I think it applies to all work because, you know, a good chunk of being an artist is talking to people about your work. And you
mm-hmm.
can't kind of jump in halfway into the conversation. You have to start at the beginning, you know, what does your artwork mean? Where does it come from? All of that. Because I have a tendency to do that myself as
mm-hmm.
an artist. I just kind of start speaking very quickly and I get a deer in the headlight look from
mm-hmm.
most people. So, yeah, I think that's what it taught me.
Collaboration is something that's emphasized quite heavily in our program. And I worked with Matt for a little while, but I also worked with two people who were very different than I am. And both really smart people, incredibly well-read on theory. And what I learned from them was that you can take a really complex theme and teach it to the children, just as I was just saying before. Like, one of our themes was agency.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my God, how are we going to talk to third graders about agency?
I don't even understand that now.
Yeah, I kind of had some trouble with it as well. But, but I mean, it ended up being making a lot of sense. They understood there's certain people who are empowered implicitly by society to do certain things and other people aren't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they understand that inherently as children. And so it actually wasn't a really difficult thing to talk to them about, but because my mind works very literally, I had to really grab, like, I had to grab Quentin and be like, you've got to explain this to me. And Allison was like, just make a sentence with agency in it, because I just can't figure out how to say it. And they just, it just was so natural for them. They'd be like, well, of course, it's this, this, and this. And then, you know, so that ended up being a really good bridge, because if I could understand it in that literal way, then it became really easy to talk to the children about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm talking with Jay, Matt, and Rebecca, who participated in the Teaching Artist Fellows program at the Armory Center for the Arts in Pasadena. They will be showing at the DAW in September. You're listening to Dabi on KSPC Claremont.
Did you guys ever do a show with the students or for the students? Did the students ever show their work, or was that not part of the...
The Armory had a program that brought in student work, but mm-hmm. We weren't a part of it. They had a community room, essentially.
Right.
And that would bring in student work from different programs they were affiliated with, mm-hmm. but not with the fellowship program.
The Armory is associated with a lot of different programs. They also, we did this as well. We were assistants in... assistants to teaching artists at the Armory who would go into classrooms mm-hmm. in Pasadena elementary schools mm-hmm. and teach a subject matter through art. So, for example, they would do an art project that had to do with whatever math concept they were working on, like fractions or something like that. Mm-hmm. They would talk about, like, Kandinsky and the shapes and have something to do with math. Yeah.
There's another one, art and poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And
great.
There's another program called CIE, Children Investigating the Environment, where they go out into the canyon and mm-hmm. do kind of explorations of the environment, and then kind of relate it to art.
And then make art based off the discoveries.
Yeah. But that's like those are public school kids, and it's their science class,
yeah.
and they're
so great.
Going mm-hmm. to like Eaton Canyon.
Yeah.
I think they're doing something with social studies as well. I think they're rolling out a whole bunch of different programs to basically bring art into the schools without losing time focusing on curriculum.
Yeah.
I'm sure that also exposes kids to like artwork that maybe they wouldn't be doing in their art class at their at their school. Because
I think
a lot of schools have some sorts of arts programming, but it's usually more focused on specifically drawing or painting or sculpture. Mm-hmm. I don't know if a lot of schools teach like performance.
Clay tends to be the one that
they love the clay.
Yeah.
Clay.
The focus of the Armory is specifically to bring contemporary art to the masses. Mm-hmm.
That's one of them.
You know, we're meant to be talking about contemporary art every time we teach.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the art programs are there in some schools, but a lot of schools are not. Because I mean, I taught a school where I don't think there was an art program, because
mm-hmm.
the kids would go nuts every time me and my teacher walked in, because they hadn't done art the entire week. And
that
was like the one, I think we taught that for an hour and a half. That was the 1 hour and a half to do art work. So
mm-hmm.
they loved it when we showed
But
them.
Yeah, like for the that season.
Yeah.
We had fifth graders come in, and I swear half of them couldn't use scissors.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I bet they could type really well.
Yeah, maybe so.
Type a text.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the idea of the contemporary art piece, because I actually had art in the school that I went to as a kid in Vermont, but art was always this thing that happened a long time ago that was by these people who were mythical, who had these special magical powers about hundreds of years ago. so to say, look, this is, you know, this is art being made by an artist who's alive right now, who actually lives in Los Angeles, and who
mm-hmm.
has work that you can see right here, is right there for you, I think is a great bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like also letting them know that it's something that they can do, and that can be part of
and
their life.
Yeah, it can be part of their lives.
How do you guys think that you're going to take this teaching experience going forward? I guess I don't know if you're going to continue to teach or if you're not, but I'm sure it'll affect your person in some way regardless.
Well, it's going to help my art practice as far as like thinking about how to present my work and how to actually contextualize my work with other people's work and curate shows.
Mm-hmm.
As far as teaching, I don't know. I mean, I like the challenge of teaching kids. So I hope to keep doing it. But yeah, I think, yeah, teaching has definitely helped me kind of just become a better artist.
I think I just have one more question. I was wondering if there was anything, or if there's a specific moment or anything that you feel like any of your students made you think about art that you hadn't realized before, if there was anything like that. Did that make sense?
I'd be saying. You know, I got a really easy one. I was one of three of the fellows that was still in school when I did this program. I was working towards my master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And
I can't believe you did that, by the way. It's just crazy.
I wouldn't recommend it. It was terrible. But it was a very intense, it's a very intense program going for your master's, and having this program on top of it, it was terrible. But the first 6 months I was working there, my artwork was awful. I was getting bad crits. My teachers were yelling at me. I was told that my thesis paper was an ahistorical piece of literary trash written solely out of ignorance.
That's very specific.
Very. Oh, it stayed in my mind.
So you're gonna be a good artist.
Huh? I'm gonna be a great artist. Well, the thing is, you know, working with these kids is it got me to kind of get out of my own head about everything and just have fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically for the last 6 months I was at school, I developed an entirely new thesis, an entirely new body of work, and all my teachers turned around and actually liked it because it was more playful, it was more fun. I wasn't just stuck in theory, which I am terrible at, which is why they all hated me when I did it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they taught me just, you know, why artwork is a very, well, can be a very serious thing. It also can be a very fun thing. You don't always have to be putting the theory before the art. The
mm-hmm.
artwork sometimes comes first. And for me, that's how it is. And that's what the kids taught me, is they don't really know what they're doing until it's done. And then they can talk for hours about it, entire stories about it. And that's kind of, I adopted that. I totally stole that from those kids.
It's really true.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I had a teacher in grad school tell me that. He was like, don't listen to your other professors. You don't have to explain it until after it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, you can take your time.
Yeah.
It's just torture to try to explain something with theory that's not even partially baked yet. It's just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt theory was just good for, like, writing about something. It wasn't necessarily good for... It was just kind of like a tool in the toolbox to help, like, examine something, like a, you know, like a magnifying glass to help, like, clarify, like, oh, that's what that's kind of talking about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, I think the kids taught me really to, I think, yeah, very similar to what Matt said, like, just to have, like, be playful with the materials. And
mm-hmm.
I remember this one time, though, this one kid, we were talking about the sculpture, and it was like this huge, it was the Mineo Mizuno
Waterworld?
It was, Coexist.
Coexist, right.
Describe it.
Yeah, and they approached it from, you know, since I'm taller than them, they would see it from, like, kind of really low, and they would just talk about how they were, like, crawling inside it. And, like, you know, I just never, you know, it was just an interesting perspective that I didn't think about looking at that piece. And then just, it made me change how I thought about it.
Definitely.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, just from that simple observation, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah,
that was a great one to tour with the students.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of any moments specifically like that, but I do remember in one of our classes at the Armory where we were learning about developmental stages of children, and they were talking about how children will draw faces with eyes and a mouth and no nose.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do like a whole science chapter on noses, they will start to draw the nose in.
Oh, I don't remember that.
You don't remember? Or like with houses, like houses will be with door. But then if you start looking, you know, this is again separate from your art class, just start talking about windows and pointing at windows, they'll start drawing windows on their houses.
Huh.
And I just thought that's just a fascinating understanding of how we what we can kind of take in our world and what
mm-hmm.
comes out in the artwork.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you guys so much for talking with me.
Oh,
this is really interesting for
me. This is fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Great.
This is good.
That was a conversation with Matt, Rebecca, and Jay, who are three artist teachers who are currently preparing and organizing the exhibition that will take place at the Daw Center for the Arts in September. It is the Armory Fellows annual show, and the opening will be on September 14th from 5 to 9 p.m. Following this PSA, you'll hear an interview with Pomona band Crater Creator. Tracks from their in-studio can be found at our blog, kspc.org/blog. You're listening to Daw Beat on KSPC Claremont.
Do you ever feel yourself stressed out or short of breath? Having trouble keeping calm and carrying on? All you gotta do is breathe. Breathing is the process that moves air in and out of our lungs. 99.9% of medical professionals recommend breathing daily. We at KSPC want you to be healthy, so take the doctors at their word and make sure to breathe. The air we breathe is composed of 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, 0.96% argon, and 0.04% assorted gases. KSPC and its affiliates are not responsible for any damage incurred while breathing.
Crater Creator from Pomona, California, and you are listening to KSBC.
Thanks for coming, guys. Can you introduce yourselves?
Thank you for having us. My name is Alberto Muñoz.
Jesús Pérez.
Luis Aguilar. Cool. El primero, el último, el original.
And you are Crater Creator.
We are Crater Creator, yes, are. From Pomona, California.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
How long have you guys been playing together for?
Since 2011.
2011? Yeah. 2011, 2010.
Happy anniversary, guys.
Yeah. Woo!
Awesome. Yes. And what, so you were saying you have some releases out?
Yes, we do. We have three in total. We have Can Sing a Sad Song and a Happy One, too. We have Niños de la Tierra and Trinity, and all three are EPs.
That's awesome.
Yes, you could find them all on Bandcamp, and two of them are free for download, so if you want to check that out.
That's so cool. So where do you guys, how do you write songs?
It's different each time. Sometimes we'll do the music first, and then like lyrics will come later, or sometimes there's a specific melody in mind with the lyrics, so that's created, and then we kind of find the music that'll fit to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I drop the mad beats. Yeah. And
we just kind of make it up as we go along.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. With, like, you sang both in Spanish and in English. Did you start out doing that, or how did you come to that point?
Well, we're all from Mexican heritage, so we all speak Spanish. We all, you know, speak Spanish with our families all the time. We didn't start it. Mm-hmm. Like, in the beginning, it was English. Yeah. And then... friends, family members, girlfriends would mention, you know, you should
all
sing
the
in
time.
Spanish. Yes. Yeah. our parents would be like, you should sing in Spanish. You'll be popular if you sing in Spanish.
¿Por qué no cantan en español?
Yeah. So we would hear that from them all the time. And then it just, an idea came to a song, and it just came out in Spanish. And that's how that one came out. And that's our only Spanish track. But
for now.
Yeah. For now. Hopefully in the future, there'll be more.
Yeah. French is coming. We got Russian in the works. Japanese.
Oh yeah.
I thought that was. I really enjoyed that. I think that's great. We've had a couple bands come in that do kind of both. Uh-huh. And it was interesting. One of them said, "I don't know if you guys know Cuates."
Cuates. I heard of them. Yeah.
He, I don't know. He came in and he was saying that he has tracks in English and in Spanish, but he plays the ones that he like. Evaluates his audience and decides which ones he's gonna play. I don't know if you guys do that or.
No. We just have one, so
it's yeah, it's like and we it doesn't like matter. That you're gonna hear it yeah. whether you like yeah. it or not.
Sometimes
yeah.
they throw us in a show where it's like, oh, it's a heavy metal show. Well, we're gonna play it. And we're gonna play the hell out of it.
Yeah, yeah. That one. Ever since we wrote it, we always throw it in. So yeah, it's gonna be played.
It's a personal favorite.
Yeah, yeah, I really liked it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was great. And then I also really liked the song Television.
Oh,
okay.
What was the inspiration behind that? Or could you talk about that a little bit?
A box of television. It was the inspiration. It's two ideas. It's pop culture. Mm-hmm. And how much it can, I guess, take up your time.
Mm-hmm.
And then how it takes up your time and it replaces things. It mm-hmm. replaces friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a quick fix for mm-hmm. just saying, you know what, I don't want to go outside. Let me just watch television. Or I don't want to talk to my friends. Let me just go watch television. Because
I don't want
to
wash my car.
Yeah, I'll go watch television. I don't want to do my chores exactly.
I don't want to sleep.
Yeah, I'll just watch television, you know, and it's there, and it will be whatever it is that you want to be, you know. It's
mm-hmm.
it says you have no patience, so it just becomes whatever it is that you want to be right on the moment, and it's a quick fix. Yeah,
that's cool. How do you think the fact that you're from Pomona, or the Pomona area, like this area, how does that affect like the music that you play, or how you think of your band, or the people that you play to?
Anything, guys?
Wow.
Well,
they say if you make it in Pomona, you can make it anywhere. So we moved to Pomona to write music. No. I think the biggest influence is going to be, there's definitely an art scene, a music scene. There's all types of art scenes in Pomona. So that definitely has helped the project just in general, because mm-hmm. we have so many friends that play in bands. So mm-hmm. it's pushed it along. It's created like an internal competition mm-hmm. with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody wants, you know, if you hang out with the people that we hang out with, you know, you have musicians, so everybody wants to be really good at it.
Yeah.
As far as on music, we listen to so many types of music.
Yeah.
Louis.
As far as like music's concerned, like my taste is, it's pretty broad. I'll listen to anything from Earth, Wind, and Fire to Dillinger Escape Plan, and listen to Madonna. And
you're gonna cover Madonna one day,
if needed be.
Yeah.
Why not?
But anything listen to music wise, I've been listening to a lot of 80s pop and. I recently, like maybe 3 hours ago, bought AFI's was a Sing to Sorrow.
Sing to Sorrow.
Yeah, I bought that. So that's, and then and Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Yeah, so we're pretty random on the music aspect of it, but Pomona has helped push along the project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Pomona is a really great like arts and music community. There's a lot going on, so there's like lots of inspiration to be found and collaboration and
stuff. It's a great city.
And the music is that we make is just, you know, whatever we feel. It's mm-hmm. not.
You're not tied to a genre or anything.
Just go with it.
Cool. And
we like it. We play it.
So, could you guys tell us about like any shows that you're playing in the future?
Next show is it's Viva Pomona, which will be in downtown Pomona. So we're extremely happy about that. We feel like we haven't played Pomona in quite a while. And a couple weeks ago, we did Pomona and Friends, which is an annual art festival. And we did that, and now we're here at the Pomona Colleges doing the radio.
Yeah.
IE Weekly is going to do a Band of the Week leading up into Viva Pomona, and then we'll, you know, close July with that. So we're really, really excited about that, and you know, it's hometown advantage when playing Pomona, and we haven't played in a bit, so it definitely it feels good this month being able to come back and do it all. But yeah, it's on Saturday, July 27th. As far as set time and stage, we don't know yet,
mm-hmm.
but I'm sure you could find that on the internet.
There's so many great bands.
There is a lot of bands. So it's exciting to be just thrown in the mix with everybody out and just like rock out and.
Mm-hmm.
We just kind of want to throw our name in the hat and just let loose and let wild and do what we do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations on all your work and releases. And I think the hard work's paying off.
Thank you for having
us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
ABC rocks.
Thank you to Luis Alberto, Jesus, Rebecca, Jay, Matt, Manny, and Margaret for their help with today's show. You'll be able to find tracks as well as an interview with Creator Creator on our blog at kspc.org/blog. and this episode will be podcasted at interchange887.blogspot.com. This has been Da Beat on KSPC Claremont 88.7 FM and KSPC.org. Tune in again next week at 6 p.m. for more.
Deseo hablarles de la identidad latina y hispana en los Estados Unidos. Se va a usar el complejo del Edipo como un lente para analizar un aspecto de la formación de identidad en la población latina y hispana. La creación del machismo en los Estados Unidos es formada por la relación entre latinos y chicanos y la gente blanca. El latino y chicano, representando al hijo, es celoso del poder político y social del hombre blanco, quien representa al padre. Con celos para el padre, el crecimiento de emociones íntimas para la madre, con una realización que nunca la va a tener, y la castración de su masculinidad por una colocación baja en la jerarquía social, el hombre trata de rescatar su masculinidad por proyectando su inferioridad sobre las mujeres. Resultados negativos de la hipermasculinidad es el abuso doméstico y la restricción de actividades y progreso social al género femenino. En este entendimiento de la relación entre la gente blanca y la formación de identidad en latinos y hispanos y latinas y hispanas, el hombre blanco emascula al hombre latino, resultando en la formación de la hipermasculinidad para recompensar lo perdido, creando efectos negativos para las mujeres con quien los hombres se relacionan. Al final, el cuerpo del mestizo o mestiza es un cuerpo hecho de fragmentaciones con un aspecto de la masculinidad y las experiencias de las mujeres siendo el resultado de la aculturación y asimilación que uno experiencia. Para saber más sobre la creación del machismo y la formación de identidad en latinos y hispanos en los Estados Unidos, contacte a Chris Gazaitis por correo electrónico a cguzaiti@scriptcollege.edu. Gracias.
Hey man, turn on KSPC. My favorite show is on.
Well, I would love to, but I don't have a radio and my computer's at the shop.
So?
So we can't listen to KSPC.
Not to fear, friend. KSPC now has a streaming app for iPhones. Unlike larger streaming apps, the KSPC app is commercial-free, and it won't cost you a dime.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah, and the app includes KSPC's Twitter, Facebook, and the playlist for the current show.
Whoa! Wait, how do I find this glorious technology?
Just search KSPC in the App Store.
Yeah! Yeah!